You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Well, the primaries are over, but the general election remains. It is April 1st. Please make sure your calendars are marked. It is a big deal. We're going to have a Supreme Court race. We also, of course, are going to be electing the next state superintendent of public instruction, perhaps re-electing Dr. Jill Underley. Or going with the lady that Republicans like to help, I don't know, dismantle public education. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Anyways, you're going to want to make sure you're voting on April 1st. If you're not sure if you're registered or where your polling place is, just go to myvote.wi.gov and check it out. You can actually look at your ballot that you will see on April 1st. Voting is not a pop quiz. You can take notes in. You can be prepared. You can see the test ahead of time. And again, you can do that by going to myvote.wi.gov and checking out your ballot and your polling place so that you know exactly how and when you're going to vote by April 1st. Speaking of elections, I've got one of our brand new state senators joining me for this next half hour, a segment we like to call Broad Appeal, and talk to many of Wisconsin's fabulous statewide and state elected officials that are women. So excited to welcome State Senator Sarah Kieski from Senate District 14 to the Maggie Dawn Show. Thanks so much for making time, Senator. I appreciate it.
Thanks for inviting me.
Well, and folks, this is why you always want to watch the show in addition to listening, because as we were getting ready to come on, the senator and I have joined in solidarity with the top bun and glasses look for the remainder of the show. You can check it out at Civic Media's YouTube site, or you can watch me at Maggie Dawn Show on X, Insta, and the Book of Faces.
I kind of joined, joke, too. I just,
oh, there's
some. My bun on the top is just smaller. That's all.
You see, the girl bun, the girl messy bun is this sort of delicate architectural art piece.
I've not yet mastered it.
Yeah, that looks like you don't care, but you did care. It's again, very artful. But Aaron Zommer's on the board today, joining us with both glasses and a bun in solidarity this afternoon. Sarah, let me just jump right in and ask you, why the hell did you want to run for public office during these crazy times?
Oh my gosh, that's such a hard, good question. I had no aspirations to be in politics, but was asked to run. Mm. And just because I've been involved in my community, I have had a voice that some people have really appreciated. And so I agreed to run before the new maps came about in a district that was really strongly Republican at the time in an assembly district. But really, it was really important to me to be civically engaged, to be willing to run, to have my name on the ballot so that I could go out and talk to people and help uptick it. So it was concerning to me about the position, the other party. I was really concerned about that. And so I really wanted to make sure that we had Democratic legislators, president, if possible. And so it was really, that was my impetus. That was really just to make sure that I participated in the most meaningful way that I could. And then the maps got changed in March. People, unbeknownst to me, appreciated what I had done, talked amongst themselves, the people in leadership and volunteers and the community Democratic offices, and asked if I would run for state Senate. So I got moved to that because I agreed. And that changed the dynamics a lot. It was essentially a 50-50 district running against an incumbent, but it stayed still true. I really wanted to make sure that we now not only had a voice at the top of the ticket, that maybe I could help Tammy Baldwin get reelected, but maybe we could have a Democratic representative in the Senate district for the first time in eons.
I love that you were sort of called to do this because people in your local community appreciated what you had to say. One of the things that I try to remind people of all the time is that while everything seems hyperpartisan, the vast majority of what happens in local government and frankly in state government is really not partisan. It's the stuff that makes our lives more enjoyable, that connects us, that brings community together, that helps our kids get educated, our roads be safer, our parks greener, and all of these wonderful things that we enjoy together as a community. I also wanted to really applaud Sarah. I went to your campaign website because I love seeing how people present themselves and the issues that they care about most. And not buried, but a little bit down the landing page, you had articulated three values that you think are very important. And they really resonated with me, Sarah. You emphasized compassion, contribution, and moral courage. And boy, if those aren't incredibly salient values that I wish we all, regardless of party, could lift up and try to emulate more. Why those particular values? What about those ideas speaks to you, Sarah?
Well, I'll tell you the little bit of the backstory. That that values exercise is something that sometimes one might do in therapy, and being a mental health provider, I had done it for myself. And I had done it before, many years before I was in the political sphere. I had done it really because I was opening a private practice. And in order to do that, I really had understood that I needed to get really clear about my values so that my new business could really be in alignment with that. So again, it was probably 6-7 years ago. I did that. And when you do that, the whole point is not to say what values are important to me that I want to choose, but what values have shown themselves to be important to me based on my life story. Mm. And so when I would look back at my life, I was like, well, what exactly is it? You know, there's so many things, right? But when I really looked at my life and looked at the things that I had done, the things that really resonated and came to the top were making sure that I was compassionate. And so mental health, obviously simple, right? Contribution, I've always done service work. I was a Girl Scout leader. I've gone on mission trips. Contribution was so important. I had started a nonprofit. And then moral courage, that one, I feel strongly about that because I have always been drawn to people that have done the hard thing. That might even go against the grain, but in the service of the collective good or to protect others that are more vulnerable. Just the movies I like, the stories I read, the books that I enjoy, I've just always believed in that. And so, and maybe it comes from, you know, a upbringing with that kind of basis of belief in my family. And so those were the three that really resonated the most. And so that's kind of was already who I am, and then put it on that that website. And what's so funny about that website is when I first started running, I just made my own website. So that was my, you know, like that is what I made because I didn't have any money and I didn't have any help, right? And so, and then when I moved to the Senate, obviously you get more help, you get, you know, fundraising.
Some money.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it's crazy. And I said, can I just leave it as it is? Because that's really who I am. And so, yes. And they were lovely about it. And they're like, yeah, that's who we want is you to be you. And so all that you see is just a genuine expression of that.
Sarah, the overwhelming response that I've heard from people as I did some diligence and preparation for our interview today about you and their experiences interacting with you is Sarah says what's on her mind. She genuinely cares that you are a straight talker. From one straight talking, broad appeal kind of lady to another, hear, hear for that. We need more women speaking plainly with some moral courage about the issues of the day. And I also just wanted to share this with you, Sarah. I have always talked to people, but especially people that want to run for office, about what are your three things? What are the three things that you hold most dear because of your personal lived experiences? And so in return, again, Sarah put on her campaign website, compassion, contribution, and moral courage. I will tell you what my three are. I need to boil them down to individual words, but my three are, I stand up to bullies. I will always speak the truth, even when it is painful. And I want things to work better. I want to make it better. And so it was lovely to me to see some echo of some of those things in both the three words that you selected, but also your personal lived experiences as to why those values are so important to you. You mentioned that you're a mental health care professional. Tell us about that. Tell us about some of your agenda, your legislative ideas as it relates to mental health. Certainly a huge statement coming from the governor yesterday in his budget address about investing in our children's mental health. And we've got just about like 2 minutes left, so we'll have to take a little break. But get us started, Sarah. Why is mental health so important to you? What are your plans legislatively?
Well, mental health, I've been a mental health provider for 25 years. I worked for a small rural hospital in the Toma area originally, and then I have my own private practice, which I still have. So I left the hospital to become the senator, but I'm still doing my private practice in Lodi. I've been seeing individuals, families, and couples for those 25 years, and what I understand is it is very helpful to have people like me in the career that I have in that field to be able to help people. Kind of how I describe it is, if you will, I'm the type of person in this field where I help swoop people up that are drowning in the water, right? They have fallen in, they're drowning, and I'm trying to help them survive, manage, navigate challenges. But what I've recognized is when I was asked to run for office, I had to figure out, well, would I want to do that? And how could that help me with my whole desire to help it with mental health? What I understand now is that my role now can be a legislator that goes upstream and tries to help people and keep them from falling in. Yeah. And so that is trying to make some legislative differences in affordability and availability of services, but also looking at the determinants of health that might be able to encourage better mental health.
Folks, that's State Senator Sarah Kieski. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more from the senator after these brief messages.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
The days for more women in politics, more Democratic pro-choice women in politics, and I've got one such lovely lady with me this afternoon for today's installment of Broad Appeal. Her name is Sarah Kieski. She is one of our state senators representing the mighty 14th District. Again, thanks so much for making time, Sarah. I really appreciate it. Wanted to share with you one of our regular listeners and texters. His name's Cam from Appleton. He texted in this, which I thought you would just love. God, put Sarah in Congress so she can liven up the Crypt Keeper vibe they have there. Thank you so much, Cam from Appleton, Mark from Prairie du Sac, also texting in saying that you are his state senator and how much he loves and appreciates your leadership. So lots of love on the text line. If you have a question or comment for the senator, please feel free to reach out on our text line, 855-75-CIVIC. That's 855-752-4842. You can always also text if you download the Civic Media app for free from wherever you get your app store. And it is one touch texting and calling. So go get that free app and tell all your friends about it. Sarah, big budget address from the governor yesterday. What were your reactions?
Oh, gosh. Well, I was really excited about some of the things he focused on. So agriculture, our farmers. I was so excited to hear him talk about that. That is a committee I am on proudly, representing the Democratic position on the agriculture committee. He talked about mental health. I am the ranking member on the mental health committee. And so was really excited about that. And he talked a lot about contributing to our young people, our kids, and our schools in particular, and I'm on the education committee. Those are like the three main places that I feel compelled to do as much as I can. And the great news is he also is honoring those and committing to those with his budget address. And so I was super excited.
Yeah, I was not the most lively budget address, but that's not the governor. I loved what he had to say. Some surprising tidbits there, too. I love the idea of auditing health insurance companies to make sure they're not inappropriately denying folks. I know that for you, the need for people to be able to access, especially emergency inpatient mental health treatment is very important to you. How do you think local governments, as well as our state governments, how should we be thinking about inpatient mental health treatment? And I'll just share with you this. I was the corporation counsel for Milwaukee County for nearly 8 years, and we struggled mightily to have enough beds for folks, and especially affordable beds for people that are suffering in mental health crisis. And we certainly saw the outcomes of the inadequacies of our system in terms of almost 85 to 90% of the people that we house, the human beings, our neighbors, friends, colleagues, that we would house in our jail had very serious mental health issues. Can you talk a little bit about this and the need for greater and more accessible and more affordable inpatient mental health services?
Yeah, well, getting immediate care is so important, right? I mean, because it helps to not exacerbate it into something worse. We need to be able to hit early and early intervention as much as we can. But also once somebody is presenting with a mental health issue, making sure that they have access to care right away so that it's not exacerbated. So they don't miss school. So they don't miss more of the workplace. So they're not in a state that is contributing to distress in the family, maybe trickling down to their children. And so making sure that we have access to that, that it's affordable and available. We need to be locally available. So we can't just have a couple of inpatient places where we have to travel hours away to be housed there, to stay there. That's dangerous in so many ways, psychologically, but also it's unhelpful for that person and that family that might be struggling. So really thinking about how do we create a better web of help, right? So that web can be sort of like a place where we can land and be caught so that we can be really helped in situations of dire need.
I wanted to ask you, Sarah, since we're here and talking about mental health, I hear from my friends when they see me out and about, they all say, Maggie, how are you getting through this? I feel really sad and anxious. I think a lot of people are just struggling with the moment. Do you have any very basic tips or some ideas for folks that are finding it hard, especially with the political news cycle as it is?
Yeah, honestly, I've had to face it myself. Because as just a human being that is seeing this crumble around me, see people, including family members, shudder with some of the changes that we're hearing coming down the pike, being concerned about my children living in a world that is going to be less accessible or maybe more dangerous in different ways. So I too have struggled to kind of figure out how do I manage. And when COVID happened, it was particularly hard for me at that time. And so what I really leaned into is this great saying that is, action is the antidote to despair. Mm. And so for me, it was getting moving, doing something, making meaningful difference. And so that can be all kinds of things. You know, at one time we were all knitting our pink hats, right? It was doing something. It might be, you know, creating a book club where you're all learning. It might be calling your legislator. It's making sure that everybody knows about the Supreme Court race that is coming up. It's making sure that you're in community and you're helping one another. Maybe it's learning how to cook cheaper meals because we're all struggling with the inflation. It's trying to figure out how do I be part of a solution? How do I help protect and be in some ways moving forward in a productive way that helps all of us feel a little bit better? Like I said, many times I said, nobody wants a depressed therapist. So I had to figure it out for me. And so now that's what I encourage everybody to do. Be proactive, figure out what you have as a special skill, interest, area of importance to you and lean into it and do what you can.
Nobody also wants a depressed radio show host or a depressed lawyer. I'll tell you that much myself. Sarah, we got about 30 seconds left. Tell all of our listeners something about you that they might find surprising.
I have 6 kids. I have a blended family of 6 kids. Yep. The boys were, when my husband and I met, they were 4, 3, and 2. And then he had another son. So we have 4 boys and we have identical twin daughters. They're about, so we have 24, 22, 22, 16, and the girls are 14 now. So yeah, I'm a busy mom.
Well, shout out to all of Senator Kieske's wonderful kids, Wisconsin's very own Brady family. Thank you so much. I can't wait to have you back. I'm Maggie Dawn, everybody. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Representative Congressman Mark Pocan to talk about the Elon Act. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn, host of this, The Maggie Dawn Show, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I am thrilled to be joined by Wisconsin Congressman Mark Pocan for this next segment to talk about what I think is one of the most important things that is happening in our country right now. If you've listened to my show, you know, in the past 3 weeks, I've been talking about that billionaire overlord guy that nobody voted for. Yeah, Elon Musk, that guy, who apparently thinks he now has bought and purchased and can control the entire U.S. federal government. I didn't vote for him. Don't think anybody did. And Congressman Pocan is going to do something about it. Welcome back to the show, Mark. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you, Maggie. Glad to be here with your audience.
So tell us about the Elon Musk Act. And let's start with this most creative and yet very, very devastatingly accurate name.
Oh, man, I'm going to have to pull it up to make sure I get it exactly right. I'll admit here.
I got it for you, Mark. I always do my homework. I'm an A-plus student and try to be. There you go.
I'll let you go the rest here.
Eliminate looting of our nation by mitigating unethical state kleptocracy. The Elon Musk Act. What is the act seeking to do, Congressman? Well,
everything you said about Elon Musk not being elected by us, and yet here he is, I would argue, more powerful than any previous president because he's breaking the law. They don't have that kind of power. And he's able to fire federal employees, turn on the spigot and off the spigot of federal funds. The problem is, if you're a member of Congress, you can't have a federal contract because you could, obviously, that would be corruption. If you're a federal employee, you can't have a federal contract in any area that you have kind of any oversight because that would be corruption. But for Elon Musk, it's just another day ending in Y. The guy's got $20 billion of federal contracts, plus some undisclosed ones with Starlink. And, you know, he's now going in and agency by agency, firing people and stopping funding for things. And, you know, if you think about it, what's a great way to have your agency not touched as much? Hey, you find a contract for Elon Musk at one of his companies. That's why we have the laws in place for federal employees and members of Congress, certainly, and the president for that matter. But just because you're the guy who bought the president and you have a title called special government employee doesn't mean you should also have those contracts. So we're just saying he can have this little title and whatever badge comes with it, but then he can't have federal contracts, or he can have federal contracts, but he can't play, you know, the role that he's playing.
This, as I've tried to explain this to people, I'm getting to the point, Representative, where it's like, how do you not see this? I worked in government for a long time. Our ethics rules required reporting of anything over $25 or $50, depending on which stinking rule you were looking at. And of course, prevented us from doing anything that resembled self-dealing by being in government and then running some other side business that would benefit from the government that we served for. It is per se conflict of interest, ethical violation 101. It is self-dealing. The idea that a guy with 20 billion plus in contracts is somehow going to be the one that we're going to tag to work on government efficiency is so blatantly ridiculous as to defy an explanation in many ways. And yet, here we are. The thing that scares me the most, Representative, and I was hoping you could speak a little bit about this, as our billionaire overlord is running roughshod through our nation's most sensitive system, getting access to trillions of dollars, accessing the personal identifiable information of the tens of thousands of federal employees, and apparently slashing willy-nilly whatever he thinks he should, and lying about it all the same every day. All of this seems to be headed inexorably, and now we're getting a little glimpse of this, that what Donald Trump is doing, perhaps at the behest of the world's wealthiest man, is proposing billions of tax cuts for billionaires and 100 millionaires. And the way that we're going to solve the budget problem in the federal government is by slashing things like Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. How does this legislation relate to that? Or is that a separate battle? We got to deal with Elon's conflicts, and then we got to deal with this immoral, illogical Trump-style approach to tax breaks for billionaires and 100 millionaires.
Well, it's a separate but related battle, but it's also the 800-pound gorilla in the room battle, because that is what all this is about. They're not trying to find waste, fraud, and abuse. That is the fraud. What they're trying to do is find the $4.5 trillion they need over the next decade so that they can provide the tax cuts for the wealthiest, for Elon Musk, Donald Trump, and all the people who belong to Mar-a-Lago and others. But what you have to remember on this is in order to do that kind of level of cut in the reconciliation bill that supposedly is coming before the House next week now, there's $1.5 trillion of cuts, which the way that the bill is written, it directs committees to cut a certain amount. So the Energy and Commerce Committee under their jurisdiction has to cut $880 billion. Well, the biggest thing that they have is Medicaid under their jurisdiction. Right. And it's very obvious that that's where they're going. And the Department of Agriculture, I think, has a $230 billion cut. Well, they're not going to cut probably, you know, some of the basic programs for farmers. They could, but it's more likely they'll go after the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program that is a little over $6 a day in food assistance, the number one program to keep kids out of poverty. So they're literally stealing from the middle class and those aspiring to be in the middle class and do this giant transfer of wealth over to Donald Trump and Elon Musk. And if they extend his tax cuts another 10 years, officially 83% of the money will have gone to the top 1% in this country. That's the reality.
And Congressman Pocan, you have hit on something that most people don't know, but tells you all you need to know about Donald Trump and the MAGA cult. And that is, when Trump tax cuts for billionaires, 100 millionaires, and the world's wealthiest corporations got passed back in 2016, there were multiple versions of this bill. I need not tell you your business, sir. But the point I'm getting at is that the version that was ultimately passed, Republicans refused to wait for the Congressional Budget Office to complete what they call the dispersion analysis, which tells you which strata of taxpayer, which income levels will benefit the most from that. Well, the reason they didn't want the analysis, sir, as you well know and just pointed out, is that the lion's share of Trump tax cuts 1.0 went to the billionaires and 100 millionaires. And in fact, some of our lowest income folks, as you put it, the folks striving to be middle class, actually saw net tax increases. Absolutely an abomination. When we couple this with the fact that we've seen $50 trillion in wealth from 1981 to 2021 migrate from the bottom 90%, so let's just say the vast majority of us, mm-hmm. not to the top 10%, but the top 1%, how are they explaining this away, and what should people that are listening be on the lookout for? What's the baloney that they're feeding folks to explain this away now?
I'm going to answer that second part first.
Please.
All of you are a member of Congress in Wisconsin. There's six Republicans that I think need a phone call, and Ron Johnson, if you are, you know, that hopeful. I'm not sure if I'm that hopeful. When it comes
I've
to
given up. Rojo but, got to go.
Yeah, but the six members of the House, because all we really need are three people nationally in the House of Representatives to vote against something. They can't advance it. Doesn't have to be three from Wisconsin. But, you know, Derek Van Orden has famously told many, including me in my office in D.C., he would never vote to cut the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program because he benefited from it as a kid. And yet he has a couple times, but this is going to be a real cut, not just there will be no increase, which is a cut, but like a real cut. And we're going to put him to the test. But people need to call their member of Congress. I also want to stress this affects the middle class the most, and also people who are trying to be in the middle class. But, you know, on Medicaid, 55% of the seniors in nursing homes are on Medicaid. 45% of adults with disabilities living, you know, and working are on Medicaid. One third of the kids in Wisconsin are on Medicaid. It's the largest single amount of federal money coming to the state of Wisconsin, about 43%, about $8.5 billion. You start doing the ripple effects, and then other things are going to get cut along the way. So it's that it's education. You know, when we cut, this is a real important one, Maggie. Part of when they have, I think, a $330 or so billion dollar cut to the Department of Education. Title I money and IDEA money is likely to be cut. In Wisconsin, it's going to be about $500 million, give or take. What happens then is either one of three things, and maybe all three. Either you're going to have fewer teachers, and you're going to have to literally fire teachers. You're going to have bigger class sizes, so your kids will get less strong outcomes. And here's the real catch. The funds will be passed to the local level, so it'll be an increase in people's property taxes to fund education. So you're literally transferring the money that you're paying on your property tax so that Elon Musk can have another spaceship to go off into the air. Woo! And we need to get that across, because it is going to be paid by the middle class in many different ways.
And the great irony in all of this, Representative, is this simple fact. All of these things will further cripple the middle class and Wisconsinites trying to be middle class. It will further dampen the economic prospects and hopes of young people, young families trying to buy homes, and all of this will have an eventual slowing of the entire U.S. economy. The U.S. economy, our 75 to 80% of our annual GDP is driven by consumer spending. It is the middle class that are consumers in this country. All of our businesses work because the middle class is strong. Billionaires, they're not consuming anything because they got all the goodies they need. All of this eventually will wreak untold economic harm. So even those of you who may be listening that are rabid capitalists, it ain't good for capitalism either, because we have to have the money in our pocketbooks to buy the goods that the big corporations are making. You mentioned Title I and IDEA. I had an educational expert on just a couple weeks ago from the Center for American Progress Action Fund. It is somewhere upwards of 75 to 80% of current public school students across the state that receive and whose education is helped and supplemented by those funds. The dismantling of the Department of Education would put 75 to 80% of our kids at risk. How can we help make these consequences clearer to people, Representative? I think that's the challenge right now.
Yeah, I mean, I look at there's two things we need to do right now. One is litigation. We've got to support the groups that are doing litigation, because that is slowing down and stopping things from happening, because many of these acts are illegal and unconstitutional.
Correct.
for that matter. And then secondly is communication. You know, when we put information out, I'm trying to do a weekly video now at the end of the week to let people know what happened that week. I'm putting a new podcast out with Liberty and Justice for Some, and we're having long form conversations with people to hear about some of these issues. I think this week we're posting tonight, Jamie Raskin. I got a long interview with, which is
fabulous.
Interesting for folks.
Send his contact info along. I'm sure Mr. Raskin and I could have a fabulous conversation. But that's
busy,
fabulous.
He's a busy guy, I'll tell you. But that's the sort of thing that we're trying to do is, you know, people get that information out there. But the most important thing, we did a press conference today, and I was going to do it with Greta Neubauer, the head of the Dems in the Assembly, and Dianne Hesselbein, the head of the Senate Dems. And then we said, invite the Democratic members who want to come. And then we had someone on Medicaid, we had a teacher and a veteran, because by the way, we should talk about veterans.
Yes.
And we do this, and do you know how many people showed up? I think about 35, 40 Democrats from the legislature to just show their support that they're going to fight hard as they possibly can to defend their constituents against these cuts, because many cuts are going to come to the state level, and then there's not going to be state funds either. So it's great to see that level. I never imagined, like, we literally couldn't fit everyone. I don't know if I've ever been to a press conference that big, and I spent 14 years in the legislature, and
it's
that strong that people are ready to fight back. And I think that's the thing. So share this information. You know, eventually all the MAGA folks will feel some of the consequences.
Won't
feel it until after the bill happened, right? But like one other, if I can, just real quick, veterans, I want to raise this issue. With veterans, I'll be real quick on this. They're laying off staff. They've frozen staff. They've already fired 1,000 people. What's going to ultimately happen is, one, you're going to get your services less quickly. And if you're a older veteran, that might mean your health and your life. And two, they're going through people's disability status to try to remove that status so that you may not even get some of the help that you currently get. So there's a lot of scamming going on.
Every single one of my beloved uncles all served in the military, all served in Vietnam, and all of them had issues getting their military disability benefits. This is bad for all of us. Van Orton's number, 202-225-5506. That's 202-225-5506. Thank you to Representative Mark Pocan. Keep fighting the good fight, sir. I got some final thoughts coming up next right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everyone. Who wants to hear my final thoughts? We've got Congressman Mark Pocan. He decided to stick around for another segment, and I am so, so glad he did. Thanks so much, Congressman, for being here. Folks, you're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We were talking about Derek Van Orton, Representative Van Orton. He has made a commitment to never cut the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP.
And
because he was a beneficiary of it.
That's actually why I played that song, Don't You Forget About Me. You got to call up his office and say, don't forget about me. Don't forget about yourself. You know, you said you wouldn't cut this.
The promises you made. Again, folks, and we'll put the numbers for every single Republican congressman. We'll include the Dems, too, but they're doing the right things. Every single Wisconsin state congressperson, as well as Ron Johnson's D.C. office phone number, we will put those in our show notes for today. You can always find those at civicmedia.us/shows. But if you happen to have a pen and paper ready, here's Van Orton's number. Give him a call, 202-225-5506. But Congressman, the representative ain't in D.C. and he ain't in Wisconsin. Where in the world is Van Orton?
From what I understand, and I only understand it because I think I followed his social media, is he's in Israel. And I know it's really warm there right now because I think, you know, a lot of people do go there in the February time period that we're in district supposed to be this week. But with everything going on in the country right now, how tone deaf is it to not be listening to your constituents who I know he's getting the calls. We've got record calls, 4,000 calls in a week, a couple weeks back. And for you just to ignore your constituents and not have a town hall and not have any kind of meetings with people. I've met with, you know, people on Medicaid. I've met with people at the UW who are afraid about seeing cuts on research. I've met with the Head Start program people, teachers, like you name it. We're going around doing my job. And, you know, one of the things is the Farmers Union invited Derek Van Orden, myself, and Democratic and Republican state representatives and state senators to a town hall, I guess, on Friday morning up in Chippewa Falls. And I'm going to be there. And I assumed Derek was going to be there, but I just found out that he turned a no in on his RSVP. And, you know, there's a lot of stuff right now happening to farmers in Wisconsin that needs to get out there. One, when they've devastated the USAID program, 99.9% of the food that we sent overseas was grown in Wisconsin. And I've heard from people in Wisconsin who are now, who are selling to that program, who now are afraid that this can depress prices and they've lost a customer in doing this. There's proposed cuts for the USDA. There were 2,600 lines that were cut that first week, and then they said they rescinded it. Well, what they actually rescinded was an OMB memo making it clear as mud. But there's a whole bunch of lines in the Department of Agriculture, including rural broadband, the Dairy Business Innovation Program that helps dairy farmers get product to market, the assistance to help get renewable energy, because don't forget, a lot of our corn and soy can also be ethanol, right? And that happens out of Wisconsin. All that's going to affect Wisconsin farmers, much less the immigration issue and help for farms, much less the fact we're a year and a half behind on a farm bill. And during all these important things that affect farmers in Wisconsin, Derek is probably swimming in the Dead Sea in Israel instead of talking to his constituents. So I hope that maybe he'll come back a little early and realize that this is something important if he does care about agriculture in his district. I'm going to be there. I'm driving 3 hours to be there, but I just hope he shows up.
Tell us again the where, the what, and the when so people can check out the comments and confirm Derek Van Orden's absence.
Yeah, it won't be a public event because it's for the Farmers Union. So members of the Farmers Union, they're having there, but media is invited. So I hope that maybe someone from Civic Media might be able to come to that. I think it's around 10 in the morning or 9:30. I'm going to look it up while we're talking here on Friday. But I think it's important because there are going to be Republicans from the legislature there as well, 9:30 in the morning in Chippewa Falls. So, you know, but this is important. I mean, I can show you right now. I'm in my office and radio, this doesn't work. But if you can see the wall, that's 600 lines of cuts. It's about a 8 foot by 12 foot part of my wall in my office. All the things that Republicans will cut in order to give Elon Musk a tax break. And when it comes to agriculture, by the time the farmers find out what's up, it'll be after the tax bill is done and it's going to be too late.
Folks, we're with Congressman Mark Pocan. He's introducing the Elon Act, but we've gone well beyond the discussion of Elon Musk's ethical conflict of interest and talking about the fundamental promises that Donald Trump, Derek Van Orden, and other Republicans have made to the farmers in Wisconsin, to good, hardworking middle-class families, the promises that they are now proposing to break, as well as breaking the back of the middle class in Wisconsin. I wanted to point this fact out. Elon Musk's wealth has nearly doubled since the election in November. The current estimates are northwards of $450 billion. I need to put this in perspective for people. If Elon Musk spent $10 million a day, every day, for the next 100 years, he would still have money left over to buy Twitter almost twice. He would have just shy of another $100 billion left. That is like blow the mind sort of thing. This is the scale of wealth that we're talking about. So let's be clear, Elon Musk does not need a stinking tax cut. Very briefly, the other thing, you mentioned all of the direct cuts that are being proposed that will hit farmers in Wisconsin as well. Mm-hmm. Let us not forget the idiotic tariff policy that Donald Trump is forwarding. We saw this in Act One. It devastated farmers, including farmers in Wisconsin. And what Donald Trump did was take nearly, $36 billion right out of our taxpayer pockets to help support those farmers. No such promises yet, just promises of tax cuts for Elon and his billionaire bro buddies. Last words to you, Congressman. Oh, we're not going to have time for him. I got 20 seconds left. How about a big thank you and an invitation to come back soon? Go ahead, sir.
All your members of Congress.
202-225-5506. I'll stand up for you. I hope you stand up for me. But it is always better when we stand together. Dom Salvia is up next.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.